I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and today is our Audio Files show. That's a seasonal podcast review. So shortly, we'll be hearing what the audio fanatics on staff at KCUR are loving in their podcast feeds. But first, I want to introduce a local podcast creator. His name is John Evans, and his new podcast is called Iconoclast of Things. Every episode takes you to what John calls a thing, but what most of us would probably call a place, like a skate park or a jogging trail. John, would you say that's about right or no?
It's usually a place or but there are episodes where there's things. I did an episode on the American guitar industry, and so my thing was a guitar.
And sometimes there's a person.
Sometimes there's a person who's a thing, yes.
People, places, and things.
Yeah.
Iconoclast of nouns.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
There are 11 episodes so far, but let's start with the first one. Could you read the words that appear on your screen when you download episode one?
Sure. Our first thing is Blue Dawn Manor, the neighborhood I grew up in. I used to play baseball in the Healy's backyard. It was the infield, which made my backyard dead center field, and the Smith's pool in left field was the water spectacular. I knew all the neighbors, the Johnsons, the Belfontes, the Smalls, Hutchisons, Hupps, Cernich's, the Saladinos, the other Saladinos, and the Domsches. We had dirt clawed fights, and I split my head open playing hide-and-seek the night Thriller debuted on MTV. In the summer, my friends and I would meet up at this power pole under the Johnson's mulberry trees. I'd wrap my purple hands around the grips of my black and gold BMX and race down this hill to a ramp we built at the bottom on the playground at this little school where I'm standing right now. Today, two Syrian brothers go to this school. Their names are Firas and Amar. And the story of how these two boys and their family got here and brought together a neighborhood of people not far from this spot in the middle of Independence, Missouri, is episode one of Iconoclast of Things. It's titled Houses of Concrete and Houses of Wood.
That's beautiful. Tell me more about Blue Dawn Manor.
Well, it was sort of this idyllic cul-de-sac that I grew up in that was... It's a different kind of cul-de-sac because it's really like a giant racetrack. And it was this very Independence place to grow up in the middle of Independence near a fire station with a school in the back and a creek nearby. And
it's a very Independence.
Yeah, very much so.
How did you meet Firas and Amar?
Well, I met them through KC for Refugees, which is a group here that resettles Syrian and refugee families into Kansas City. And Sophia Khan, who kind of started that organization, told me about this little family that had resettled in Independence that had been not only welcomed into their neighborhood, but really kind of brought the neighborhood together. And I met Firas and Amar through their father, Ibrahim, and their family of five.
What do you mean when you say that they brought the neighborhood together?
Well, I mean, this was sort of what I call a garage neighborhood, not a front porch neighborhood. It was one of those post-World War II builds where the houses had garages, and so people pulled into the garage and went into the house. And these people didn't really interact with one another much as a neighborhood. And this Syrian family moves in, and these two little boys, Firas and Amar, and Hamse, the three boys, are sticking their hands through the fence to pet the neighbor's dogs. And the neighbors took an interest in this family, and come to find out they were resettled refugees. And the neighborhood came together and had holiday meals together and picnics with the Syrian family and really kind of adopted them into the neighborhood and got together in ways they hadn't before.
What surprised you most during your conversation?
That the idea that refugee resettlement and the value that these people bring to this neighborhood is not a political idea. You had a person who voted for Trump and a person who voted for Clinton on either side of this Syrian family, and those three families came together, and they celebrate this family being in their neighborhood every day.
Let's listen to a clip from the episode. You've just asked Sam, I believe, the translator?
Yes, yeah.
You've just asked him what he misses most from back home, and he's started telling you about the big extended family.
Actually, I asked Ibrahim what he misses most, and Sam
Sam
describes Ibrahim's answer and then interjects his own.
Okay, that makes more sense. But you've just asked him what he misses most from back home, and he's started telling you about this big extended family and, mm-hmm. and the dinners they used to have once mm-hmm. a week where aunts and uncles and grandparents would get together, but he can't finish his sentence because he's gotten choked up, so you jump in.
This is the hardest part for you, isn't it?
Well, I still have family myself. And this is where he grew up. This is his childhood. So he missed all of that. Oh, I have to say this. And I think I probably speak to... Syria is like a mother. America is like a wife. You love your mother. You can never, no matter what happened, you still love your mother. And you have to be faithful to your wife. سوريا لأنها مثل أمنا. أمريكا مثل زوجي. بدنا نكون مخلصين. بس ما فينا ما نحب أبنا. صحيح. صح.
What was that moment like for you?
It was emotional. I mean, everybody in the room had wet eyes, and but it clarified everything for me in terms of not only the way these people felt about being in America and their home, but also it clarified for me kind of the direction I wanted this podcast to go, and what was important about this, and why I needed to do it.
What are the answers to those questions?
Well, every issue can be told through someone's story, and it can be understood better through a specific thing, a noun, and that it's important that people hear the stories, because that's how they can understand the larger picture.
Tell me your story. How did you start doing this?
I was on a walk with my significant other, Judy, and I needed to do something different. I'm a musician, and so I have to do things to make money, and the things I was doing to make money weren't very fulfilling.
Like what?
I make videos. I do marketing videos for companies. I do music composition for companies. I write songs that companies use as background music or feature music. And but in addition to that, I'm a songwriter and have been for decades. And the things I was doing to make money weren't fulfilling. It's marketing, and it's not humanity in a lot of ways. And but I was able to use some of the skills I learned through doing that to understand humanity better through this.
I mean, was there a moment where, like, an aha moment?
The aha moment was years ago. I interviewed a man in New York City. I was interviewing a bunch of tax pros that work in a tax office in New York City. And there was a man I interviewed by the name of Bill Summers who wears shoes that are painted like watermelons. And he walks around New York on specific days that are historically significant to him.
August, like his personal history.
Well, no, they might be part of the national. August 2nd, it's the day the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution was actually ratified, not 4th of July. I think, or maybe it's July 2nd, but he picks these days and he wears these the late Bill Summers wears these shoes painted like watermelons and walks around New York and engages in conversations with people. He lived in Chelsea.
But he's one of the tax guys?
Yeah. Yeah. He was a tax pro working in this office, but he had this amazing story. He was born on the site that became Lincoln Center. And so those years ago, this process started, but it wasn't until having this walk with Judy and then doing this episode, I started to understand that it was connected to Bill in that way.
So you did the first episode before you were really sure what it was you were making, why you were doing it?
Yeah, this was going to just be a talkie podcast, just interviews. And in the process of making that episode, I said, no, I need to reconfigure everything and make this more of a storytelling podcast.
Why?
I think stories end up giving people an insight into these big issues that conversations may not compel people to understand. Stories don't have an agenda. And stories enable me to sort of be honest and true to the story.
Well, let's hear another clip. This one is from the episode about Harrison Street Skate Park.
Now, last summer was my first time at Harrison Street Skate Park. We brought our dog, Pico, down here, and what we saw was for every older skater, there were two or three little kids either sharing a skateboard or skating a hand-me-down board. In the pool, there was an older skate guy holding a little boy's hands as he skated the bowl, and a little girl danced as they went by her.
Kids in the neighborhood, like, will just come up and we're just like, oh, you need a skateboard, you need wheels, you need trucks. Like, we have hand-me-down all of that. We'll just give them to you and teach you how to build one yourself. And then, like, we've gotten so many kids involved in skateboarding. Yeah. It's gnarly.
You know, we always have old boards. Like, I got an old board laying right there. We got old wheels and bearings and trucks. We got old parts laying around everywhere. So we got all that stuff together. We made boards, and we, as many as we could, and we gave them out to kids that come down here that live in the neighborhood, and we got them skating.
You know, the music really sets a mood.
Good. I've been doing it long enough. I better be able to do that at this point.
Can you talk about the mood you're trying to set?
Well, it does kind of vary from episode to episode. But in that clip, I tried to convey that through the music that these are guys I grew up with. I grew up around, you know, like Zach sounds like half the guys that ran around Blue Dawn Manor. And so I wanted the music to sort of reflect that Midwestern sensibility that is at the heart of these characters.
There's something nostalgic.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
the sound.
Yeah. I mean, and that's in that particular clip. You definitely hear that. And I think I'm at a point now, 25 years in, where I can kind of intuit what I'm trying to put out there without overthinking it too much and being too on the nose.
I want to get into what you found nostalgic about these kids who are doing this thing at the skate park, like right now. It's happening now. I mean, for you, it's nostalgic because it takes you back, but mm-hmm. it's an interesting story about this skate park. I mean, there was this just sort of like dead end street where nothing was happening. There were fallen branches, things like that.
A lot of illicit activity was
yeah.
happening.
So yeah. to say nothing was happening is not accurate, but like, yeah, it wasn't. There was not infrastructure for
no.
like wholesome activity,
yeah.
I guess I'd say. And, you know, these kids, young adults, mm-hmm. I guess, kind of built a skate park with nobody's permission. But mm-hmm. then it became an actual thing.
Yeah. The neighborhood, the city public works actually came in to tear it down. And the neighborhood, one specific neighbor, Dan Wayne, went out there and said, no, don't tear this down. This is keeping all the illegal activity out of here. And so Public Works gave them permission to build the skate park on this paper street. And what they did through cooperating with the community council in Columbus Park was they took this area, they turned it around, made it into an amenity that people in the neighborhood value, that the Syrian or the Somali kids come to and they learn how to skate. And it's really... it's the definition of civic engagement. I actually talked to the mayor about it on Monday, or yesterday. I just released the episode where we talked about this, and he said it can't work in every instance, but this is the kind of civic engagement we want.
You know, you said that these are the guys you grew up with, and you don't mm-hmm. mean that literally. What do you mean?
They remind me a lot of the people I grew up with. I mean, just the way... the things they did, I mean, we were always building stuff out of whatever was around. There were vacant lots in our neighborhood, and we would turn it into whatever we could. And so in that way, these guys are a lot like the people I grew up with when we were kids. But they're also so in that spirit of building things and that sort of thing. We didn't have an illicit activity area like they do, but... but yeah, it was. I mean, they're those guys. I mean, I immediately understood what I was. BMX. These guys were skaters, but it was very similar.
In the process of doing 11 episodes of your podcast, Iconoclast of Things, what have you learned about podcasting?
To stop worrying about the numbers.
What do you
and
mean?
I started out and I was just constantly looking at how many downloads and traffic and. It's more about a relationship that I have with the listener and, most importantly, the respect that I show for the people I interview and the relationship I have with them.
Can you give us a hint about what's going to happen in episode 12?
Well, episode 12 is up. That's my interview with Mayor Sly James. And
Episode 13?
Episode 13 is the story of a father whose adult son on the autism spectrum moves back in with him after years of not living together. And they move in together in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and the relationship that they reform and kind of the issues of being an adult on the autism spectrum.
John Evans with Iconoclast of Things, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
When Central Standard returns, KCUR staffers will review the podcasts they've been listening to. And if you have a favorite you're dying to share, call 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today, for our occasional audiophile segment on Central Standard, we're going to talk to the audio lovers closest to us, KCUR staffers. I'm here with some people whose names you probably recognize. Ellie Moxley reports on politics and education for us. Hi, Ellie.
Hey, Gina.
Cody Newell is KCUR's digital editor, and if you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, Cody writes most of those posts, so it's like you already know him.
Maybe so.
Maria Carter is, I mean, I would say she is the proverbial man behind the curtain. She's our news director, figuring out who's covering what and how, but you may remember her voice from when she did morning newscasts.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be here back on radio.
Yay! Okay, so you guys, in general, what trends are you noticing in the podcasting world?
Well,
everybody looked at Cody.
I think for me, one of the biggest things has been seeing... And this is like a long-term trend, but like years ago, I think podcasts were a lot more comfortable being way longer. And now I think I'm definitely seeing a lot more podcasts that are like maybe in the like 18 to 20 minute range and sometimes even less than that. I don't know if that's not every podcast is that way.
Well, but. And I think one thing I'm noticing a lot of is spin-off podcasts. I think we've got some, you know, one that I'm doing today is kind of a spin-off of another thing. And I think, you know, one that Ellie's mentioning has another spin-off. So I think we're seeing more, you know, people liking something, brand building amongst podcasts.
So like it's been around long enough that we're in the Different Strokes Facts of Life phase of podcasting.
Yeah, and it's wonderful.
I feel like podcasts have really kind of spilled out into my daily life. Like I feel like when podcasts first became a thing, you know, I've been in public radio a few years now. I was always kind of an audio nerd. I was paying attention to that. But now I feel like I can't go out with friends or, you know, meet up with a group for a drink. And I always hear like, hey, what are you listening to? What's been good? Did you hear this episode of, you know, and binge listening. I really think that that's something that, especially after S-Town came out, that people are really, they're consuming podcasts the way I think so many of us have come to, you know, do streaming video and Netflix, that kind of thing.
So it's not just the audio nerds anymore.
No.
But everyone in this room is an audio nerd, and I'd like some definitions on that term.
Oh, gosh. What is an audio nerd? Probably someone who gets way into things like the production of it. Like, ooh, if I'm wearing headphones, this is going to sound better. Like, that's like way far on the end of the spectrum, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's, I would say maybe it's general nerdery that podcasts feed more than necessarily the audio aspects. You know, I think one of the great things about podcasts is that you can kind of, you can find a niche, you know, you can find all sorts of things. If you're very into Game of Thrones or, you know, The West Wing or whatever it happens to be, there's a podcast out there or 10 for you, you know.
Okay, we're about to jump into reviews, but I'd like each of you quickly, so we know who we're listening to encapsulate your taste in just a sentence or two.
Wow. I would say, this is Maria, and I would say my tastes are really broad. I don't do many daily news podcasts, as that's much of my life, but I like things that give me kind of a broader background that sometimes may be on the daily news.
I like things that go very in-depth. I'm still a regular listener of, you know, kind of our on-air broadcast, less the packaged news podcast content. And I'm a big true crime buff.
Okay. And Cody?
If it's nerdy, I'm going to listen to it.
All right. So to get a sense of what that means, you're going to talk to us now about Important If True.
Yeah. So this podcast, Important If True, I discovered this not too horribly long ago. It actually just launched this year. It's these three friends get together and basically find really weird things on the internet and come up with like theories about them. Even if they know the answer to whatever the thing is, they still will come up with a crazy theory about it. And so the clip I think that we pulled is about this story of this weird facility in Mesa, Arizona that was found to be housing a ton of primates. And next to the facility was a big ammunitions factory. And it's like this bizarre story.
These two things go together nicely. Oh,
clearly. And it's this weird story of this guy was shooting drone video footage and found the primates. And they eventually discovered that it was this weird research project by the University of Washington. Don't ask me how.
I think I saw this movie, Cody. Yeah.
It's called Planet of the Apes. But yeah, they just discussed this really, really crazy story and came up with their own theories for it.
Okay, so let's hear this little clip from Important of True and the primates who live next door to an ammunitions facility.
The obvious other one was maybe that there's, given that it's next to a munitions factory, that there's like armed primate like force training.
Oh, yeah, I mean, so it's just Planet of the Apes.
It sounds like the new Planet of the Apes
right.
movies.
But then I thought that maybe if this is a university project, and as we know, universities are aggressively left-leaning and hate freedom, it could be that it's in fact training gun safety monkeys. Like, this could be a force of monkeys who are trained that whenever they see a gun, they just strip it to parts in seconds. And it's scary as f because you wouldn't want to with a primate that's just coming at you.
No, I would not.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Cody, so what do you like about this? There seems to be a style of banter.
I think I like a lot of things about this podcast. One, I think the three guys that host it are just, you can just feel that they just have a good friendship and a good style of playing off of one another. And I also just really like how ridiculous it gets, because there is a lot of crazy things on the internet, and I like when someone finds these things and presents them to me and then takes it even further and makes it even crazier than it actually is. Because that story is a crazy story in and of itself.
Well, that podcast Cody just recommended is Important If True. And now, Ellie Moxley, you have just stated that you are a true crime buff.
I am. And I think that normally people think that means I started listening to Serial and really loved it. Serial actually was my introduction to the true crime genre. But I actually stopped listening about halfway through because I didn't really like how it was put together. I thought it was very speculative. I thought it was kind of a little bit of, that navel gazing we sometimes get. You know, I really don't think the podcast knew all the time what direction it was going. So I started seeking out other good true crime podcasts. I actually really like S-Town, even though that didn't end up being as much of a true crime podcast, though there was almost kind of like a mystery to solve there. I really like one that was done up in Minnesota called In the Dark, that was about, a 20-something-year-old cold case that was finally solved. But my new kind of one has been Criminal. And the thing I really like about it is they really explore the meaning of the word criminal. They really kind of take, it's not just, murder mysteries. It's not just, kind of the gruesome details. It's talking about all the different aspects of what it actually means to be a criminal or to engage in criminal behavior.
So you've brought in a clip from an episode called Vanish about how to fake your own death.
Because, come on, aren't we all, like, sort of curious about who would show up at our own funeral?
A little bit, yeah. Actually, more than a little bit, I think.
Right.
I've
also just wondered
really
about faking your own death and the reasons behind it, Like,
well, I mean, it's usually money,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And maybe you just want to get away.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
to facilitate a dramatic entry.
Yes.
In a room.
Why not, right?
Okay, but so what do we need to know before we listen? Who are we listening to?
So Phoebe Judge, the host, is talking to Elizabeth Greenwood. She wrote a book about kind of the death fraud industry, which is what it's called.
Okay, this is from that episode of Criminal.
We wondered about the practical aspects, how to prepare, where to hide, and what not to do. And once you start thinking about these logistics, it's hard to stop. How much does it cost to fake your own death?
The price I heard quoted to me, if you wanted to fake your death somewhere like the Philippines, including, getting your cadaver, getting your documents, soup to nuts, the whole thing, about $5,000.
Huh.
Which doesn't seem like a tremendous amount of money if you think about it.
The phrase soup to nuts is quite jarring in that context.
I know, right? But I think this is one of those things, like, so I'm a person that, like, I think the thing that it has attracted me to true crime is I always kind of, I'm a details person. Like, I'm always like wondering what all these details you'd have to like pull off to like make something like this happen. So this really appealed to me. It kind of deals with this like practical aspect of like, how would you go about faking your own death? And, you know, one of the things they talk about is like, you really have to aggressively cut off ties to everyone in your life if you actually want it to work. And that's the part that really, you know, most people can't do. They can't
actually...
When you
say most people can't do, like, of those who have tried?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, in theory, there could be people out there that have faked their deaths and been wildly successful, but we don't know it because, you know, they have been wildly successful.
Everyone thinks they're dead.
Everyone truly thinks they're dead. But, like, that's what usually ends up happening is, you know, it's the people they can't let go of, you know, sending a card to mom or dad on their birthday or, you know, they
can't. That would be so horrible.
They can't, you know, they take their dog with them. You know, all these little different things that you'd have to take care of and you'd have to just truly walk away from your life as it existed.
Why can't you take your dog?
Well, I mean, if your dog is recognizable, if it
gets
can
loose
call
and
attention,
gets microchipped,
or just people would notice that the dog is gone and then say, "What happened to the dog? I thought he was dead. Like, who has the dog?"
Ellie, how does listening to true crime inform your reporting? Do you think it does?
I'm not sure if it does so much. I think for me, it's more about kind of the. It's the side of something that I would never do. Like, I am very much a practical rules following kind of person. And I guess the thought process of, you know, what it takes to even because what the show often explores are kind of the little ways that, you know, people end up bending the rules or they do behavior that's labeled criminal. But then you start talking to the person and you realize that they're not that bad and their motivations are actually maybe decent for what they're doing. And the people that they talk to on this podcast, I feel like on Criminal, are really, really compelling. And it's done in a way that's very not judgmental.
You know what, Ellie, I was just thinking when you were saying that, like, if you think about gangster movies or whatever, like, usually if those are to be believed, because I don't have any firsthand knowledge of this subject matter, but if those movies are to be believed, there are sort of rules for being a criminal. Like, there are, you know, like,
there's a code of conduct,
right? Just even like you're telling me the rules for faking your own death, like you can't bring your dog.
Right. And I mean, part of it is, you know, for all of this, it's I do spend a lot of time, I feel like, thinking about kind of what would happen if someday I became like the subject of a podcast. Like, I always like this is a great conversation starter, guys. Like, go out for drinks tonight with your friends and be like, have you ever wondered what they'd say about your life if you ended up the subject of, like, you know, like a missing, vanished, disappeared podcast?
Oh, gosh.
And it really makes you kind of think. And then I'm like, gosh, I'd be so boring. They'd find my planner, like, that's like down to the last like to do list. Like, you know that I still have laundry to do when I get home tonight. Like, I would be a really, really boring person. Or maybe I'd be really fascinating because I keep such good notes about what I'm doing on a day to day basis.
I think it might also depend on the circumstances of your disappearance.
All right, so guys, if you have to make a podcast about me, I just want it to be really good.
Okay, done. Well, so Ellie Moxley recommending true crime in general, particularly Criminal.
Yes.
Maria, tell us about By the Book.
Well, By the Book, it's a very new podcast. I think they're just 4 or 5 episodes in right now. And it's kind of a spinoff of Happier with Gretchen Rubin, who it's a podcast about happiness. And the person who does By the Book is her former producer. And so it's Jolenta Greenberg and Kristen Meinzer. And what they do is they get a different self-help book each week, each podcast episode, and basically try to live by all of its rules. So they've done the, you know, the life-changing magic of tidying up. And, you know, they also report back even after the episode. And it's like, it's really inconvenient to put your dish soap away in a cabinet because you often have dirty hands and you need to go get it. And, you know, so it's like these funny things because I think we all are exposed to so many self-help books and ideas. And you kind of wonder, what is it actually like to do that or to take it to the extreme of doing it?
Or like, what's wrong with me that I don't already do all these things? I feel sort of like validated by the knowledge that putting away your dish soap doesn't turn out to be convenient.
Yeah, because there are so many things that you just use so regularly that like getting it out, using it, putting it away in a, you know, tucking it away so it's super tidy is a hassle. And so, but in the clip I chose, it was, they were following French Women Don't Get Fat. And it's quite the book. And
which I didn't realize had instructions.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, many of the instructions I think are sane and normal about, you know, it's like, oh, track what you eat and, you know, enjoy your food, slow down, take time. But the clip that we have kind of gets them at the maybe not so normal moment of there's also this like jumpstart phase where you're supposed to basically only eat boiled leek soup for an entire weekend. And it doesn't go well. They both of them end up being about as hangry as you can imagine anyone. It's like hanger rage.
And we're going to pick up at a point where one of the characters realizes she can eat something that she doesn't think she's allowed to eat.
Yeah.
All right.
I did not see the part where Marie says you can drizzle a little bit of olive oil over your boiled leeks.
Boiled leeks.
I flipped the f- out when I found this out.
Oh my God, it's so much better. Oh. Why am I crying?
Babe.
What?
Actually, you're doing so hot.
What do you mean?
You doing okay?
No.
You're like crying.
Because I got olive oil on my tongue. And it tastes so good. But you know, this is supposed to make you reset your palate, and like I'm really appreciating that. Oh boy.
Oh, it is so sad to think that, like, you know, that someone has been so deprived that olive oil has this reaction.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, how it turns out is, I think this particular person, I think it's Jolenta at this point, thinks, you know, her husband makes her stop. You know, like, hey, I think this is bringing up some bad things, you know, a little bit of history of disordered eating in there. The other woman in the podcast finds it a little bit more helpful of, you know, like, hey, this actually did kind of, I hated that part of it. They both hate the leek soup.
yeah, leeks seem to play a crucial role that I wouldn't have anticipated.
Yeah, yeah, I really thought more about leeks for like 40 minutes and I'd never thought about leeks before. But yeah, you know, so I think she finds in kind of the follow-up episode that, hey, you know, yeah, this did have some positive benefits for me.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll hear more podcast recommendations from KCUR's Maria Carter, Ellie Moxley, and Cody Newell. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 and KCUR.org. And coming up after Central Standard,
welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, sitting here with some of my friends who work with me here at the station. Maria Carter, she's our news director, Ellie Moxley, who reports on politics and education, and Cody Newell, our digital editor. Hi again, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Gina. So before we pick up with our current podcast obsessions, I'm curious about your thoughts on the difference between radio and podcasting, because I have my own answer to this, but do you guys think these are truly different animals?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, in radio, we often have these time posts that we need to hit. Podcasts can be a little more free and I think a lot more casual, too. Also, we heard several things bleeped in those clips.
That sort of part of the deal.
I didn't know that was an option, that I could have submitted a clip that needed to be bleeped. So I appreciate your guys' boldness.
Oh, yeah.
So we love to bleep.
Yeah. But I think that's another thing, is that it's more informal. There are fewer rules of, you know, this is going out to everyone, so it needs to meet some certain FCC standards, you know, that you can partake in saltier language, or you know, or be way more informal, or really speak to an audience where I think that's kind of a niche audience, whereas in radio, a lot of times we're speaking to a broad swath. So we might explain things a little bit more when we do get into those more specialized areas.
I also think I think about like a lot of our programming on KCUR and public radio programming as it's kind of like a balanced diet. Like there's going to be parts that you really enjoy. There's going to be those stories that give you driveway moments, but it's not every story. And part of it is like sometimes, you know, you're listening to a story and it's important. It's about the world around you. You need to understand it. But it's kind of like eating that vegetable that like you're not a huge fan of necessarily. You know, so I think that part
I
of
love vegetables.
I do too. But like, you know, that doesn't mean that like overcooked broccoli is really gonna like satisfy my palate always. And sometimes, you know, about the fourth time you hear the same story, like throughout the day, you're like, all right, I get it. We've covered this in incremental things. I think podcasts do a really good job of being conversational. And I also help think it really has to do with that kind of like we're realizing that our kind of niche interests, we're not the only ones with them, and that, you know, we can kind of dig deep and have these kind of nerdy conversations, as Cody has said, in a way on a podcast that we can't if, you know, you're broadcasting to everybody.
And so a lot of your recommendations have come with a distinction between a public radio podcast and a non-public radio podcast, which is a technical distinction on some level. It either comes from a public radio station or not, but it's also maybe a stylistic distinction.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the podcast, but definitely I think public radio, not to bash on public radio since we're in public radio, but public radio I think has struggled in some ways to actually fully engage in the kind of conventions of podcasts that make them really special, like that informal tone. Now, not every public radio podcast hasn't achieved that, but I think it's been tougher for public radio to break out of the tradition of the 5-minute feature story or the newscast. I think it's been tougher.
Well, and that being said, though, I mean, so many, I think, of the popular podcasts, people have come from the public radio world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even if they're not currently produced by a public radio station.
Yeah, from like a production standpoint, having public radio background is like huge for making a good podcast.
Maria, okay, so we're going to maybe revisit that theme at some point, but tell us about the Pollsters.
Ah, the Pollsters. This one is actually produced by Westwood One, which is a commercial radio group. I think it was somewhere else not long ago. But it's two women, Margie O'Mara, Kristen Soltis Anderson. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican pollster. And they really break down all the polls. I started listening during the election, and they'd go really in-depth and say, well, this was a good poll because, you know, and they do it in a very formal way. I also think it's great to have women's voices talking about politics. Mm-hmm. It's often a very male-dominated field. And but then they also always mix in some fun stuff. You know, like there's a recent one about Harry Potter and what house people want to be in. Most people chose like Hufflepuff over Gryffindor. So I know. Hard workers. I think it was British too. So
the loyalty thing.
Guys. Yeah, but I think it's also just a great way to kind of get a little bit in depth and get some of the news stuff without it necessarily being in the moment current news.
So that's the Pollsters. And Cody, just quickly, these are a couple that are being talked about a lot. So let's just touch on them. You call both S-Town and Missing Richard Simmons risky.
Yeah, so both of those podcasts, I think, had elements to them that, like, from a journalistic ethics perspective, were maybe a little bit questionable, like following Richard Simmons' story and, like, going to his house and bothering him about where has he been, even though he's basically publicly said, I just don't really want to be in the public eye, is a little questionable. S-Town, without spoiling anything, is dealing with a subject in some ways that are pretty personal. Like there are some really, really, really personal details that come out in that podcast that I think are a little bit questionable, but they're both really, really, really amazing podcasts. Like some of the best podcasts I've listened to this year, for sure.
I'd agree. And I think like those are good in a way that they make people talk about some of the journalism, the, you know, like the issues of, hey, can this person give their consent for this?
Right.
And, you know, also trying not to spoil things.
And we are in this moment where the ethics of journalism are concerns of the public,
right,
more than people usually, you know, seem aware of. I mean, I think it's a concern for the public at all times. But yeah, historically, it's mostly journalists who talk about journalistic ethics. And these days, that's not the case. We have a caller who wants to give us recommendations.
Excellent.
Based on your descriptions of your tastes. This is, in fact, a former intern. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. What can you recommend?
Great. So, Ellie, if you like true crime shows, you should check out Trace, which is an Australian true crime show.
Ooh.
Yeah,
Ooh.
So it's about a mom who was killed a few decades ago, and it was learned right after the crime was committed that she was on her way to her local parish to talk to the priest who allegedly abused her son, and the story just gets even crazier from there.
Interesting. I've been listening to Case File, which is an Australian true crime podcast. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is I feel like we all are kind of aware of kind of like big cases and things that have made kind of caught the American public attention. And it's really interesting to see the perspective of what kind of captures other countries' fascinations.
Well, Kyle, can we get the other two recommendations somewhat quickly? Because I have a couple more things I want to get to, but I want you to have your chance to tell Maria and Cody what they would like.
Absolutely. Maria Carter, if you're interested in learning about stuff but want to get out of the journalism world, you can hop into the startup world with Masters of Scale, which is hosted by Reid Hoffman, the guy who started LinkedIn. And Cody, if you like nerding out, you can nerd out on musical theater by listening to the new 36 Questions podcast, which is a musical podcast featuring Jonathan Groff, who is in Hamilton.
Wow.
Thanks, Kyle.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Kyle.
And so I'm going to get back to our in-studio recommenders. Cody, tell us about 30 for 30.
Well, so 30 for 30 is a video documentary series from ESPN that has different filmmakers doing these kind of in-depth documentaries about various topics, usually pretty closely related to sports, but sometimes it kind of branches out a little bit. And so 30 for 30 podcast is just the audio form of that. And it's hosted by Jody Avergan, who is also on the 538 podcast, but it's reported by different reporters each time. And so it's just like really, really slickly produced stories about sports. And it has a lot of things that like I'm not even the biggest sports fan, but like there's something about hearing old sports broadcast footage that like gets me deep. And I don't know why, but I just love hearing that. And like most of these episodes have just an abundance of that. And they're just really good in-depth stories about sports fandom and certain aspects of sports that you wouldn't think about. It's really, really good.
Let's really quickly hear a tiny clip from an episode about a Yankees suck t-shirt.
Yeah, so this is the story of how the chant Yankees suck, which originated with the Boston Red Sox fans, and it became a t-shirt because some guys who are involved in Boston's hardcore scene kind of grafted onto it. And this clip, I think, is of two fans who managed to get some of those shirts.
We went in and we saw the Red Sox play the Marlins, like some random team. It had nothing to do with the Yankees.
I had gone to my first game at Fenway. It was against the Blue Jays.
We came out and they were still outside selling Yankees suck shirts.
And I saw this guy had Yankees suck shirts, and I said, I got to have one of these.
So I had to have a Yankees suck shirt, so my dad, of course, got me one. They only had like a size large, and I was 135 pounds at the time, and everything I wore was like a size small, but that's all they had.
It's a special shirt. You wear it on game day. You wear it when it matters.
I kept that shirt until I think I lost it in Hurricane Sandy.
You walk by a guy and you're both wearing Yankees suck t-shirts, or even if he's just wearing one, put your hand out, give him a high five and go, yeah, Yankees suck. And they'll go, f*** the Yankees.
Whole team sucks on the back, Yankees suck t-shirt.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. So, Cody, that's from 30 for 30.
That is from 30 for 30.
I want to really quickly take a call from Gary, who has a podcast here in Kansas City. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Gina. Good to be on your show.
Thank you. What can you tell us?
Well, I'm a retired Kansas City police officer, and I primarily worked intelligence on organized crime over the years in the 70s and 80s when they were during the River Key and investigated the skimming from Las Vegas, and I did a documentary film and a book about that, and I started this true crime podcast, kind of starting to tell about the mob in Kansas City, but it's been going so long. I tell stories about the mafia and some other stories from all over the United Bob Perdella, serial killer in Kansas City, and Richard Grissom Jr., another serial killer here in Kansas City.
Gary,
as well
it sounds like you have all the upbeat stories. What is your podcast called?
Gangland Wire, Crime Stories.
Gangland Wire. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Ellie, that sounds like it might work for you.
That's what, you guys can't see me, but I'm writing it on the corner of my notes.
Well, we're going to have to go in just a moment, but it also sounds like Ellie and Maria are also both recommending Presidential. So just the couple sentence synopsis of that one.
I really like that it drills down on kind of an aspect of each president's presidency in a way that's kind of packaged so you get a better understanding of their place in American history and their legacy. It's really narrowly focused, and I think it's very smart.
And you can learn about the presidents that you know nothing about from American history class.
Millard Fillmore. Well, Ellie, Maria, Cody, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You can listen back to all of their podcast recommendations later today at kcur.org/centralstandard. And now we want to take a moment to remember our dear friend and colleague, Steve Bell, who died 1 year ago today. And his absence has been felt by all of us ever since. Every afternoon for 15 years, he told you what you needed to know about the day's news in 1 minute and 45 seconds precisely. KCUR's Sylvia Maria Gross has this look back at the man who told Kansas City's story bit by bit every day.
Steve Bell was a child of Kansas City, a proud graduate of Southwest High School. He went to the University of Kansas, earned a PhD in psychology at UMKC, but he never got the broadcast bug out of his system. He started in radio at the age of 19, over the years working at five different AM and FM stations, alongside Walt Bodine, Rush Limbaugh, and Charles Gray. He liked to talk about his hippie days, his commitment to the civil rights movement, and folk singing. In his early days in commercial radio, Steve would write and perform jingles. This is the first one he ever did for Lee Jeans. He talked about the art of jingle writing with Walt and Gina Kaufman back in 2009.
Me and my banjo.
He wrote this one for an agricultural company.
Wild oats are lurking in your fields.
That's pretty funny.
When they show, you know it's time to stomp them before they hurt your yields. And it was for a product called Carbine.
It was that playful mastery of the English language that Steve applied to his newscasts. Every day he monitored news from a dozen sources. He walked around listening to city council hearings on his wireless headphones while talking to you about a completely different story. He distilled complicated policy into a few key conversational words.
The state agency will have to contract with a private company by January 1st to check people's eligibility for food stamps, child care, and other welfare programs.
At the point that we hired Steve, we were still a very small organization. In fact, I think we may have had one, maybe two people in the newsroom.
That's Bill Anderson, who hired Steve Bell here at KCUR in 2001.
And right away, I was taken by the fact that he was a history book of journalism for Kansas City in particular. And he was incredibly passionate about this city, and he let you know that. And Steve had kind of a twinkle in his eye.
We all got to learn from Steve how to put 10 pounds of news in a 5-pound bag, giving all sides a chance to be heard. Until the end, he spent late nights getting a story right and filing it for the web. He rarely missed a day of work, except every September he had to go to the Walnut Valley Bluegrass Festival in Winfield, Kansas. In 2009, he took a microphone with him.
The festival started in 1972 as a two-day flat-picking guitar contest. In this, its 38th year, about a fourth of the music on the three main stages is bluegrass. Not surprisingly, you'll also hear the old-time fiddle tune and country honky-tonk of groups like the Wilders.
Steve had his own guitar stashed in a recording booth, and photos of his dogs Moose and Sherwin were his screensavers. He talked all the time about his family, his wife of 56 years, Lenora, his son Stephen, his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. His son told us he was the best friend a son could ever have. Steve Bell died doing what he loved most, preparing the afternoon newscast. He was 77. For KCUR 89.3, I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, but I gotta give my friend Steve the last word.
This is KCUR 89.3.
That was the unmistakable voice of Steve Bell, who we lost unexpectedly this time last year. We remember him fondly. And that brings today's show to a close. But you can listen back to this morning's podcast reviews and the story behind a local podcast, Iconoclast of Things, at kcur.org/centralstandard. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope. Danielle Hogarty is our intern. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date.